We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Mac will be back tomorrow. McNeil and Parkins on the score. As I mentioned in transition, Mac had a follow-up appointment for the paralyzed vocal cord. They did not need to do another round of the collagen injections, which can keep you out, as it did last time, for about 5 days. He did have a spray of some sort. Doc said he'd be back faster if he rested it for a day. So,
getting back fast.
Yeah, that's right. We're almost through this thing completely. At least, that's what we think. So, Max should be back tomorrow. Yeah. It's been a hell of a show so far. Thanks, Shane. Albert Almora was on the show. People thought it was contentious and uncomfortable. I did not. Will Perdue was in studio. He told a fantastic Michael Jordan gambling story that I had not heard before. State Senator, who is the chairman of the gaming committee, was in studio to talk about the future of legalized sports gambling in Illinois, or he was on the show, he wasn't in studio. And then Daniel Carcillo took a flamethrower to the NHL, the NHLPA, and NHL media. So that happened. You can hear that for the 4 o'clock hour of the podcast page. Also, we will give away a pair of tickets to see Fleetwood Mac and a pair of tickets to see U2 before the end of this hour. But Yu Darvish starts tonight. And there will be a lot of attention on this start because he's been bad. Like, it's been walking pitchers and cramps and balks and not overcoming adversity and not pitching into deep into games and questions about handling the game plan. And it's just, it's been bad. So far, ROI, return on investment for Yu Darvish has been bad. Right? Let's call it what it is. And frankly, for Jose Quintana, it hasn't been what you want. He was okay last year with the Cubs. He had a great start against the Nationals in the playoffs. And you can argue that as soon as you make the playoffs with Quintana and he wins you a playoff game, it's a trade for now. That validates the trade. But the Cubs' goal is dynasty, and the Cubs' goal is another World Series in this window before the end of the 2021 season. And they traded for Quintana for 3 years. So he's got to pitch and pitch well in more than one playoff game to justify giving up your best prospect in your organization by far, who looks like he might be a future MVP candidate, in Eloy Jimenez, and Dylan Cease, the best pitcher in your organization. So, like, so far, both of those moves, I would say, not yet paying dividends on what you gave up. However, I think some of the calculus that people are doing on this is a little faulty, and I'll tell you why. Like, I agree with everybody to a point, right? They gave up a lot for Quintana. He hasn't been great yet to make it worth it. They spent a lot on Darvish, and he certainly hasn't been good enough yet. But when they traded Eloy and Cease for Quintana, remember, Theo said this, and it's absolutely true, and this isn't like a Cubs homer point. This is a money point. When they got a pitcher as good as Quintana, they also got that contract, and that contract allowed them to sign Darvish. So when people are saying they should have traded for Justin Verlander instead of Quintana, you would not have had the money with what you were paying Verlander to then sign Darvish. So that's a false like straw man argument that you're creating there. Because sure, Verlander has been better than Quintana.
Been better than both of them, let's be honest.
Absolutely, but you'd still need to have another pitcher.
Sure, sure.
Right?
Although Verlander's throwing about as many innings per outing as those two combined. So.
Right. Listen, Verlander would have been.
I'm just pulling your leg. Relax.
Verlander would have been great, but I'm just saying, like, the value of Quintana, as much as it was the innings and the high quality stuff. It was the contract. They got him with 3 years and $38 million left on that deal for a team that didn't pay. They're trying not to pay the luxury tax. They don't want to pay the repeater tax because they want to be able to sign a big time free agent this year and maybe go into the luxury tax. So remember when you're doing this, like Theo's job, Theo and Jed's job is not only to build the best roster possible and to use the resources that the Ricketts family give them, but it's also to keep them at that, right at that threshold below the luxury tax so that it doesn't get too ridiculous and that every single year, if they're able to, they can add, right? Like we're going to have Jed Hoyer on the show on Friday. Last week, when Theo was on with Dan and Connor, he made the headline about we're not going to, you know, it was a special circumstance with rental players. That 2016 team deserved it. You're not going to make a habit of it. One thing I want to talk to Jed about on Friday is how close were they to being sellers last year? Like now that all of those guys have left, right? Now that Wade Davis got his money and the season's over, like how close really were you? Because it's not a guarantee every year that you're going to be able to be a buyer. But part of Theo and Jed's job is to keep them in position with resources and the Ricketts family to say, hey, we are going to be able to spend this money, use these prospects, and go out to maximize this window. And the Quintana deal is one of the biggest moves that they've made in terms of really maximizing their financial flexibility. They got some expensive players on this team, man. And they are able to afford it and not be at the luxury tax threshold so that next year, if they want to pay the luxury tax, they'll be doing it for Manny Machado or Bryce Harper. And it's not a stretch to say that that would have been impossible if not for the trade for Jose Quintana. Like, when they got Jose Quintana, it also was 50% of the way to them getting Yu Darvish. Now, neither of them have been good enough, right? Like, this is not an excuse for the performance of Darvish or Quintana, but when people say they should have traded for Verlander or it was a mistake to trade for Quintana, you're forgetting the economic part of it. You're forgetting the money. Now, he's still got a pitch, and he still has to be better, but it's way too premature to say that those guys are not worth the investment, whether it was in prospect capital for with Eloy and Cease or in financial capital with Yu Darvish. It might end up being that. Like it is absolutely in play that those end up being bad moves, right? Like the Jason Hayward contract, I think it's fairly safe to say the book's out on that one. They're not going to get return on investment for that investment, but he made the speech in the World Series, so, you know, it is what it is. It's way too early to be writing off either of those moves. But I will be honest with you. When you think about a playoff rotation, which is what the Cubs are doing, right? The Cubs are going to the playoffs, and so it's who are you going to trust? I'm there with Hendricks. Lester is awesome in playoff games, but we know that he's not the same. They got a lot of work to do. Like, those two guys have a lot of work to do over the two-thirds of the season that's left to get any Cubs fan at anywhere near a point where you're like, yeah, we're giving the ball to Yu Darvish in a playoff game.
So wouldn't you rather give up Addison Russell and Schwarber for an established pitching arm as opposed to some kind of rental deal for Manny Machado?
If it comes to that at the deadline, I get maybe, but like they're so invested in Quintana and Darvish that those guys aren't leaving the rotation, right? Like, is there a scenario where the Cubs play in the NLCS and Darvish and Quintana are healthy and they're not getting starts? Right? It doesn't exist. You guys are both shaking your head at me. Like,
you made your bet already. Like,
this is the rotation.
Clear cut, yeah.
Yeah.
One through five is. It's not up for debate, barring injury.
Right, the order is up for debate.
Sure.
Right, the order is up for debate, but the participants is not. So just all I'm saying is, when people are writing them off, like, okay, but they're getting the ball in playoff games. You used tremendous capital to get them. It's really early, especially in Darvish's case, to be writing him off. And when people mention Verlander, and I've seen that a ton from media members, radio hosts, journalists, fans on Twitter, like, if they would have gotten Verlander, they would not have gotten Darvish. And then they would have spent the money on a lesser caliber pitcher of Darvish. And you could argue, hey, Verlander's been great. They would have been better off. But you're doing some funny money there. And maybe they would have been in the luxury tax this year. And then you could have forgotten the conversation about Bryce Harper or Manny Machado next year. They traded for Quintana because of the talent, which he's not pitching up to, but also the contract. So that's why at least one of these guys needs to be good. Like at least one of them needs to be good, because it was a really calculated move by them. Quintana first, Darvish second, fits into it's not a cap, but the payroll, and go from there, and you've got your rotation. And neither one of those players is holding up their end of the bargain yet. So I'm interested in the start tonight for Darvish. It still is just one game, but at this point, he's had his DL stint, he's had his flu, he's had his cramps, he's had his balk, he's had his pitching problem, I'm done with the excuses. Now pitch. Doesn't mean it was a bad move, but pitch.
Hey, I ran into O.J. Simpson the other night. How about that?
How about that? Coming up next, if you missed Joe Maddon, he was fantastic. I think he's my spirit animal on this gambling stuff, but also he will go in depth on the state of the Cubs pitching staff. You'll hear it coming up on The Score. McNeil and Parkins on The Score. Caller number 7 to The Score's contest line at 312-591-6700. Congratulations. You win a pair of tickets to see Fleetwood Mac at the United Center on October 6th. Once again, that's caller 7 at 312-591-6700. This segment brought to you by Burlington. Refresh your spring closet for less at your Burlington store. What's hot? Stripes, dots, and gingham, plus cool hardware like pearls, sequins, grommets, and much more. Burlington style for everyone. So the texter who says they could have traded for Quintana and Verlander, with what prospects? No. They traded the prospects for Quintana. That allowed them to get the good player on the cheap contract instead of Verlander, who, yes, was amazing, but was the older player on a much more expensive, albeit short, contract. And also to the texters who saying they would have won the World Series last year if they had Justin Verlander, and the bats disappeared. Wasn't the pitching. Now, Quintana had an awful game against the Dodgers. I will absolutely grant you that. That was pathetic. But Justin Verlander was not the difference between last year's team winning and losing a World Series or winning that series against the Dodgers. Joe Maddon was fantastic today. Let's get to it. They lead in to Joe's comments that I thought gambling was already legal.
Oh, it has. I mean, that's not just to me. I mean, look around. I think Vegas has been there for a bit. If you want to place a bet in Vegas, you could have done it for the last, I don't know how many years. In everybody's hometown, there's always some kind of action going on somewhere. I mean, I don't understand why it's such a big deal, except that maybe those that have the monopoly on it are kind of upset. Otherwise, I think it's going to regulate itself rather quickly. I think it's going to, just like off-track betting became just another thing. Back in the day, at first, it's always viewed to be this game changer. It just makes it easier for those that like to gamble to gamble. It's not going to impact our game, I don't believe. Like I said, it's been there. If anybody wanted to infiltrate, they could have done it. But I just don't buy all those arguments. It just makes it easier for people to bet. It permits other states to get in on the tax money, and that's how I see it.
Is it, because baseball has always had that stigma of, whether it's Pete Rose or going back years before it, bettors influencing the game in little pockets here or there. Doesn't seem like you're worried about that at all, and that it kind of, I don't know, in your opinion, does it police itself, essentially?
I think it makes it even more unlikely, the fact that it's legal. And so because that should be controlled, regulated, watched more closely, so why wouldn't you think that it's more, watched? Police, however you want to describe it, mm-hmm. as opposed to having it be illegal where it's easier to maybe subvert. So it's like a lot of other things, man. I think once you give it an opportunity to play, you'll find out exactly what you got. But it's not like it's not been legal. It's not like prohibition has been overturned. Gambling's been legal, and it's been legal in a lot of places. So all of a sudden now you could gamble somewhere in Iowa. Who cares? It's all over the place.
Have you ever, as a manager at any level in the minors, ever had to have a talk with a player who maybe you found out was not necessarily betting on baseball, but maybe had a gambling issue? I mean, we know that people are prone, some have a problem, and there's some, especially at the minor league level, when you can barely get a peanut butter sandwich for lunch, there might be some temptation there to take that per diem and maybe go to a boat or something. Have you ever had to talk to a team and say, look, let's not do this?
Not at all. Not at all. I remember back in the day, I played for the Salinas Angels. We were in Reno, and that's where I met Harry Dalton, the GM of the Angels, at a crap table. Legal. You know, so I think a lot is made of nothing a lot of these times. It makes for great conversation. Those that are just opposed to gambling or those that have vested interests regarding other groups not being able to do this, that's where you're going to hear the most noise. It's just another method of lobbying, regardless of where it comes from. It just is. So I see it as a push. I think it's something that was going to eventually be done anyway. It just happened to be done in May of 2018, and then you just move on.
You guys will have Yu Darvish coming off the disabled list today against the Braves, and in kind of a big spot in your rotation, given the way the last few days have gone. You mentioned after a game about how much you've had to put on the bullpen, how many innings you've had to ask out of him because of some short starts from some of the starters. You walks into a place today where you're asking for a little depth coming off the disabled list like this.
Yeah. Well, actually, disabled list, not that his arm was injured. He had been ill. And, you know, actually, people that were making anything of that, Chase Anderson in Milwaukee had to do the same thing because of an illness. And, again, realize 10-day DLs permit this to happen. It has nothing to do with the person's character or makeup. It helps the team stay strong while somebody's getting well. That's it. So he's not like he is out of shape physically or arm strength wise. So he's on his normal numbers. He pitches well. He's going to get his 110 pitches if that's what it takes. Looking forward to him really starting to nail it down. Like all these guys, the good part about all of this is that a lot of our starters have not been as consistent as they're capable, and we're still in pretty good shape because I know they're going to become consistent. You, one of the best arms I've ever been on the field with. So let's just keep moving it forward. I have a lot of faith in this guy. He's going to start nailing it down. And that's it. I mean, when you're on the field, when you've scouted, when you've been doing this for several years, you know talent when you see it. And this guy is among the best arms, like I said, I've seen. So just give him a little time to get his feet on the ground, get everything going in the right direction. But I'm eager to watch him play tonight. Listen, of course, he has not pitched up to his capabilities, but he will.
Fans have high expectations for Yu Darvish, and in large part, they know the price tag that the team paid for him. Fans have high expectations for Jose Quintana. They know the price in trade, and more so every day as the big name is headed toward the major leagues. I'm trying to find out, when it comes to the pressure and some of these starts, what is real and what is not. What we are projecting, or what a fan's feelings may be projecting on an actual person or situation, what is real? How much of the size or heft of each of these individual starts feels that way to you or to the pitcher involved?
I actually read a great quote back in it. It might have been, what was the quarterback from Notre Dame? Was there a Clements that played quarterback at Notre Dame?
Yeah, Tom Clements. He became an offensive coordinator and worked with the Packers, right?
I'm almost certain it comes from him that, and I think I'm right, but I'm not 100% sure, that pressure is self-inflicted. I've always loved that phrase. And, you know, I've remembered it, and I think it was from him. But anyway, I think in general that's true. You know, we all could feel the pressures of the universe coming at us from all different directions, whether it's fans or your parents or girlfriend, whatever, your boss. There's all this stuff that's pressing at us. But at the same time, you know, when you, as accomplished as these guys are athletically speaking, it's just a matter of them getting comfortable and getting out there and starting to feel. Believe me, man, when it comes to a pitcher, it's in the fingertips. When you feel where that ball is going, you know where it's going, and you have confidence in where it's going, all of a sudden you pitch up to your capabilities. Now, if you're not capable of being as good as Quintana or Darvish, then, of course, that's an unexpected result. But these guys are really good. So I just want them to know that I have confidence in them and that they need to go out there and just really, you know, kind of like grind, work through all these whatever issues they may be having. But at the end of the day, what you feel out there is self-inflicted. It's whether good or bad. And that's why, you know, when you incorporate even sports psychologists as an example, and you talk about routine, sometimes you have to rely on routine more to stay in the moment and stay focused on the task at hand and not let things spiral or spin too quickly. We all do it. You've done it. I've done it. We've all done it. And whatever this little mechanism that we have, the difference is they got to do it in front of 40 or 50,000 people. So these are learned experiences or moments or skills. And so these guys, as they get that feel back and they're able to really focus on the target only, and this other stuff just becomes white noise, that's when they're going to start really nailing it down.
Kevin, Kevbo, seventh Kevin.
Oh, I love Fat Willis. Yes, oh, I love Fat Willis. Yes, oh, I love Fat Willis.
Yes.
Oh. Well, I'm glad that was a thing.
that happened. I feel better about it. Shane Reardon, in for Tanny, doing a great job. He's doing a job.
Oh, I love Fat Willis.
Yes.
Shep, you feel like you're I mean, not, maybe not a perfect game, but throwing like a two-hit shutout right now today?
A solid outing. Not Darvish or Quintana-like, more Hendricks-like from me today. Not quite perfect, but doing okay. I will say I'm battling through some adversity right now.
What's that?
Because I don't know if Daniel Carcillo, while he was in and he used my headset and used my muff here, for lack of a better term, because that's what it's called, I don't know if he had a certain amount of cologne or something on. But I am battling through for this last half hour because my eyes are burning out of my head.
Oh, like, it's a fragrance issue.
It stings. Like, my eyes legit sting.
Like going into a department store and you just, like get inundated with it?
It's kind of how it feels right now. I don't know if that was all from him, but ever since I picked up my headset from letting him borrow it, I'm definitely feeling the effects.
Okay. Well, hey.
I can kind of see you. You're kind of a blur right now.
You're playing through pain, though, man. That's adversity.
That's what it is. It's a rough life being a radio producer, man.
It's tough. That's kind of how I felt, too. This segment, by the way, brought to you by Spot Hero. And finally, here's a way you can save time parking. Use Spot Hero anytime you park. First-time users can enter the promo code SMART for $10 off. Spot Hero, park smarter. Did you guys see who are collaborating or who is collaborating? For a stand-up show where they're only doing 7 appearances. They will be in Boston for 3 shows, Houston for 2 shows, and El Paso, Texas for 2 shows. Have you seen?
Is the Blue Collar Comedy Tour making a return?
No.
Oh.
No, it is not.
Is this the John Mayer, Dave Chappelle thing that they did in the winter?
John Stewart, Dave Chappelle.
Okay, so he's just switching Johns.
He's switching Johns. Yeah, Dave Chappelle and John Stewart will be sharing a stage for 7 nights between June 11th and June 24th.
I had a friend who went to a couple of the John Mayer, Dave Chappelle ones, and it worked really, really well. So I figure it'll be just as good.
Wow. Chappelle's the best stand-up of our lifetime, in my opinion. And John Stewart is probably the best political satirist of our lifetime. And he's getting back into stand-up, and he's going to be doing a special for, I think, HBO. So he's going to be working out some of that material, reportedly. But, like, I don't know what tickets are going to cost of that. I've read that they're going to try to control it from the secondary market, but that might be worth a flight for your boy Park Park. So, I mean, I used to watch The Daily Show every day that Jon Stewart was on it. I don't watch it anymore, like, unless they do a thing that goes viral. But I DVR recorded every day Jon Stewart for 6 or 7 years. I probably watched every single episode. And then, obviously, Chappelle's Show is the greatest sketch comedy show of all time. So those two geniuses, very formative for me. Like, I wonder if they're going to film it. If they're going to film it, I probably wouldn't make the flight, and I'd have to see if the tickets are even possible to acquire. But That's a pretty incredible duo. The draft lottery is tonight. It's in Chicago. Shep has formulated ideas on why it's going to be rigged for every team, who the Bulls should target, and why tonight is such a huge, huge night for Garpax and the future of the rebuild. We'll get into it coming up before we hand it off to Zach Zaidman in Cubs baseball. It's McNeil and Parkins on the Score.
Well, Stacey King, who does the Bulls game, calls him Jimmy McBuckets. Jimmy B. The B stands for bucket. So, big shot.
The last piece of the Jimmy Butler trade gets quantified tonight. We won't know the name, obviously, but I would love very much for the lead of tomorrow's show to be, who do the Bulls take with the number one pick in the draft? Because they hit that 5.3%er and moved up in the lottery. By the end of the show, by the way, we will give you a shot at some U2 tickets. Pass it off to Zach Zaidman at 6 o'clock. They've got an 18% shot at a top 3 pick, 5.3 at the number 1 overall pick. The most likely destination for the Bulls is 6, with a 44% chance and a 33% shot at 7. So if it's anything outside of 1, 2, 3, 6, or 7, something went horribly wrong. Because they can't be 4 or 5, and if they're 8 or 9, they had some horrible luck. If you're watching the lottery tonight, basically, you don't want any team below the Bulls to go out of order, because that could mean that a team would move up in front of the Bulls into the top three, and the teams that are in the top three can only drop out of the, you know, two spots down, basically. So that's why the lowest the Bulls could be is 9, but that would mean that two teams jumped them from below into the top three and pushed everybody back, 1, 2, 3, and 4, all the way back, and pushed the Bulls back to the 9 spot. So 8 and 9 are exceedingly unlikely. 6 and 7, the heavy favorites, with 1, 2, and 3, basically 20-to-1 shots for, you know, 20-to-1, 19-to-1, somewhere in there, for the Bulls to move up in that area. And it's just unfortunate that the Bulls' timing came in a year where they tanked when everybody was tanking. And I don't say unfortunate as in, like, that's bad luck, because they could have planned for it. But if they get the 6th or 7th pick and they take a guy with a high floor but a low ceiling, but who isn't going to be a star, that isn't how you tank. Like, they got to get a star in this draft. They got to get a top three player on a championship team with this pick. Doesn't necessarily need to be the best player on a title team, although I still don't think that they have that guy. But they've got to get a guy with this pick that can be a top three piece on a championship caliber team. So Donovan Mitchell from last year, Jason Tatum from last year, Klay Thompson. Like, you know what I mean? It doesn't have – I heard the guys earlier talking about how, like, they didn't know if this draft had a best player on a title team. Man, most don't. look at how the NBA works. Most drafts don't. LeBron's been in the finals 8 years in a row. Like, you know, it's a start. You can have Russell Westbrook. It's a great pick. He's a great player, but you're not winning the title with him as your best player. It's been proven. You'd be thrilled to get a Russell Westbrook guy here. But so you don't need to get the best player on a title team in this draft. You just need to get a guy who's better than Zach LaVine or Chris Dunn. Like, I think Markkanen is going to be a top three player. Like, whatever this rebuild turns into, whether they peak at Eastern Conference Finals, Eastern Conference Semifinals, like, whatever the rebuild peaks at, I think Markkanen's a top three player on that team. I don't know if Dunn is, and I don't know if LaVine is. They might be. Like, LaVine's got a really high offensive ceiling, but he's flawed defensively. And Dunn's got a really high defensive ceiling, but he's flawed offensively. So that's tough to make those guys your foundational pieces, right? Like, Durant, transcendent scorer, one of the 10 best scorers probably in the history of the sport, and because of his length and athleticism, a good two-way player. Klay Thompson, great two-way player, top 10 shooter in the history of the sport. Steph Curry, the best shooter in the history of the sport. Warriors are a title team. LeBron, best player, best talent, top five talent, whatever you want to say, in the history of the sport. Like, those guys don't come around every year. But you just need to get a guy, because if it's Mikal Bridges, which everyone's talking about, like, yeah, he's going to be good. He will be a pro. He will have a 10-year career. Man, that guy has a low ceiling from what I've seen. He's just a good player. The goal is not to trade your all-NBA player, tank, put your fans through the rebuild to get a 3-and-D guy. Like, that can't be the goal and the end result of all of this. So, I'll be honest, I don't know yet. Like, I, for the guys who are slotted to them in that range, to me, the guy who most likely could be a star on a title team is Michael Porter Jr. Because he is 6'10", with handle, with athleticism. He's got, like, a guard skill at 6'10". So you could play him at small forward and say, that's the guy that checks Durant. And now he's got some defensive questions and all of that, but we'll see. He didn't play enough college basketball to know. But in terms of, like, the size, right? Ben Simmons, super versatile, hybrid, freak of nature talent. Like, that's what he projects out to be. But he could bust. We've seen him play, like, 3 college games. He hurt his back. That could be chronic. You know what I mean? Like, he could never develop physically. So he's got a wider... But Bamba, if you tell me that he's got a legitimate offensive game, I'm interested in him. because I think he could be a game changer defensively. And the Bulls don't have a lot of those. Like, that's the other thing. Markkanen, as hard as he plays, he's got some limitations on that end, especially with how athletic the stretch fours are at this point in the league. LaVine's got huge limitations on that end. It's tough to be a title-contending team if you start only one plus defensive player. So if Dunn is a plus defensive player and Bamba was your plus defensive player, like, I'd be interested. But you got to tell me what his offensive game can be. Because you can't be a star in this league. Like, Rudy Gobert, really good player for Utah. Not a superstar. And
I'm just surprised of how high you think the ceiling is offensively for LaVine. Like, I know he's coming off a knee injury this year, and you can't say that his product this year was 100% by any means, but like I guess I'm just more reserved on what his ceiling is offensively.
I think that he had it might not be as high as I am hoping it is. Like, I admit, like, that's a little bit of optimism, but I think he's got a very high offensive ceiling. Just on, the guy's been a 40% 3-point shooter before, and he's young and he has insane athleticism. Like, that guy can. That's everything you need to be great offensively right now. He doesn't have the handle. He's not great off the dribble. Like, and he needs a little bit of ISO game, which is not great. But if he can, he's young enough that he can still add to his game. And if you've shown top percentile athleticism and really damn good shooting, that's a bedrock of a very good offensive player. But he's awful defensively, and we got some questions about the between the ears stuff. Like, he thinks he's a superstar, which I don't hate, but it's a question of, will he play his way? Will he work his way into being as great as his athletic talents suggest he can be? But Shep, I am interested in your case for the tanking, or the rigging of the lottery.
Well, no matter who gets the number one pick tonight, whoever's rewarded that or given that tonight, you're going to hear the conspiracy theories. It happens every year in the NBA, and maybe it's their own doing from the old, they stuck the nitrogen on the card, so the Knicks got the number one pick and got Patrick Ewing in the first one. But to this day, you always hear that whoever gets the number one pick, it's for this reason. They're trying to do this city right. They're trying to do this team right. And you're going to hear the same thing tonight, and there's a case to be made for pretty much each and every team that's in the lottery this year to make that case.
All right, so let me go through some. So Cleveland, by way of the Brooklyn pick, is easy, right? Keeping LeBron in Cleveland, protecting his legacy, incentivizing him to stay, that sort of thing.
Yeah, it's that or the other side. It's the they got two number ones back-to-back after LeBron left originally when he went to Miami. They got Kyrie and they got big-time bus guy from UNLV, forgetting his name.
Anthony Bennett.
Yeah, they got those two in back-to-back years, so it's happened before with them. So either you get a talent that gets LeBron to stay there, or you get a talent to help try and replace LeBron in the future.
Okay, Knicks is easy.
It's New York,
Fizdale.
Nowhere does a star shine brighter than New York, so the Knicks get that number one pick, then obviously the NBA rigged it for them to get it.
Running mate for Porzingis. Bulls is easy. Lottery's here. The league is better when the Bulls are good.
That's right, and the Bulls were not happy when the league told them that, hey, you're tanking a little too hard here. Play your starter. So what do the Bulls do? They won 7 of their last 15 games or 16 games, went on a little run there. So here's your little reward. Here's the number one pick for you playing in line with what we told you to do.
I can't think of a good reason for Memphis.
Well, they want to. The NBA looks at Memphis, and they're like, you know what? This year you are awful. But for the most part in the last decade, you've been a team that'll go be a playoff team, second-round playoff team. We want to reward you for being the anti-tanking team. Sure, you had an awful year this year. But for the most part in the last decade, you've gone the way of saying, we're going to be in this, and we're going to play to get to the playoffs, even if we're not going to win the West and win a championship.
Right, we're going to spend money on Conley.
That deserves to be rewarded.
Nah, the NBA is not that altruistic. That's a stretch. Phoenix, I'm kind of rooting for, because I think that they'll take Doncic and Devin Booker in the backcourt is a really exciting proposition, and it takes a lot to make them interesting. So Phoenix is one that I could talk myself into because I just love Devin Booker's game so much, and I'd love to see him have a great guard next to him. What did you have for them?
Well, just that they get the hometown kid, not the hometown kid, but the
Andre Ayton stays in
Arizona. That markets itself perfectly. So I would have them going number one and taking Ayton instead.
Yep. All right. I'm with you there. That makes a decent amount of sense, man. Do you think that there is a there's not a consensus around the league at who the number one pick will be, but most people think it's Ayton or Doncic. And I think I still lean Doncic for the Bulls, man. Like, if the 5.3% comes in, it's a perimeter league. You win with the ball in your hand more than with big men, even though I think the next evolution of the NBA, it's going to be Giannis's league and Embiid's league and all of that. Like, when I hear Dan talk about how he has questions from watching DeAndre Ayton, I get it. But, man, I watched every game Joel Embiid had in college, many of them in person. And the same criticisms that Dan has about Ayton, you could have said the same exact thing about Embiid.
I shut it down.
Like, motor, effort, consistency, dominating. Man, it's hard to dominate as a big man at the collegiate level. The guards suck. Like, it's really, really hard. And the game's 40 minutes. And it's so congested. So, like, if people are telling me that Ayton's the next Embiid, then that's a no-brainer. But Doncic, his clips are just out of control. And he's playing against men as a young guy. Like, to me, I'd lean Doncic right now for the Bulls, but let's go 5.3%. Man, awesome show with interviews today. Albert Almora, I didn't think it was uncomfortable. Some of y'all did. Some of y'all soft. Will Perdue told an incredible Jordan gambling story that was a lot of fun. Steve Stottleman, he's the Illinois State Senator, Chairman of the Gaming Committee, the state of Illinois. He talks about the future of legalized gambling in this country. And then Dan Carcillo just napalmed everyone, former Hawk. It was captivating stuff. So check it out. Subscribe, rate, review. We'd really appreciate it here at the McNeil and Parkin Show. Thanks to Kevin Zipak, Nick Shepkowski, Shane Reardon for hanging out. Did I give away the U2 tickets? No? Caller 6 to the Scores Contest Line, 312-591-6700. Sixth caller, you get a pair of tickets to see U2 at the United Center, May 23rd. Cubs baseball is next. I'm out.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of four lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.